Chapter 16. The city is boggy and overgrown and dark, and nightfall only makes it darker. "You know," Cody says quietly, right at Mace's elbow, "if we do make it to the Citadel, we're going to have to face whatever's in there in the dark. I really don't like those odds." Mace doesn't either. Doesn't like any of these odds. With the whole planet around them a hostile force, with too much darkness in the force here, too many terrible things that bled out into it, turning it, warping it. The Citadel at the center of the city is its own warp, grim and gaunt and looming, untouched by time.
"The alternative," he says quietly, "is to sleep out here."
Which won't lend itself to sleep at all. There are animals out here, minds in the shadows that only feel like hunger and rage. And Mace has never dealt directly with chrysalids before the Vornskur is here, but he's willing to guess that's what they are. At the very least, they're aggressive, and that's reason enough to put solid walls between them and the creatures. Cody's breath is rueful. "Yeah, I don't suppose your Jedi senses can find us a nice bunker somewhere in the city?" Mace snorts.
"That would be convenient," he agrees,
and skirts a sprawling tangle of glowing fungus. The pale blue brilliance lights up the air around them, fading back out into velvety blackness until the next pool of light takes over. And it makes everything even eerier, more haunting. The ruins loom like stripped bones above them. The air sucks at their boots, and the fungus glows like eyes watching their passage from the dark. This place is evil, and darker than any Mace has ever left before. If it didn't hold their one hope of escaping the planet. But it does, and they have to brave it for that reason, no matter how distasteful.
"No secret bunker senses?" Cody asks. "I'll strike that one from the list, then." "Only on certain occasions," Mace allows.
And when Cody makes an aggrieved noise, he can't help a faint smile.
"The Force provides us with what we need to know."
There's a moment of very judgmental silence.
"What? It just tells you when you need it?" Cody asks skeptically.
"Like some back-alley fortune-teller on Nar Shaddaa?"
"Back-alley fortune-tellers are often Force-sensitives without training," Mace says mildly. "Sentients whose parents didn't want to send them to a Jedi temple, or who weren't tested for a midichlorian count. I've been told it's a very common fallback."
Cody has nothing to say to that. Very exasperatedly. Hiding his humor carefully, Mace raises a brow at him and asks,
"Was there a point you were trying to make, Cody?"
"Chitty," Cody mutters, and nudges him sideways, out of the way of a scattering of broken stones. "Glass," he says in explanation, and Mace nods his thanks.
"Sir,"
Kix says, glancing back from where he's following Anakin, "are we going all the way to the tower tonight?"
"We should," Anakin says, but he slows, coming to a stop at the edge of the light. "It's not that far ahead."
"We don't know that it will be safe to sleep there if we do make it, General," Kix points out. Cody glances at Mace, who guesses the direction of his thoughts and inclines his head. Taking that as agreement, Cody says,
"He's right, sir. We have no idea what's inside. If we can find a secure spot out here, maybe we should hole up and tackle the Citadel when we have some reliable light. Helmet lights can only do so much."
Above them, thunder growls, one long, bone-shaking rumble that goes on for far too long. Anakin gives the sky an unhappy glare, then folds his arms over his chest and glances at Mace.
"Master, what do you think?"
Mace considers for a moment, then closes his eyes, breathes out,
the tired ache of too long on his feet, fading into the background as he touches the currents of the Force. They're twisted here, tangled in unnatural ways, but there's a warning, a sense of anticipation, like the fear of an animal crouched low and waiting for a predator to pass. Frowning, Mace raises his head and asks, "Anakin, do you feel that?" Anakin gives him a confused look, but frowns, eyes going distant. Pauses, surprise flickering across his face, and then nods grimly. "Something's coming," he says, and glances sideways. Looks like the second floor of that building's still intact. Might make a good lookout point, as long as we don't make ourselves too obvious. "Sirs?" Fives asks, alarmed. "Something like the Vornskers?"
"Yes," Mace says.
"No," Anakin answers at the exact same moment. Mildly perturbed, Mace raises a brow at Anakin, who pulls a definite face. "Sorry, Master," he says, resigned. Mace shakes his head.
"Don't apologize for listening to your instincts," he says. "Try to understand them rather than dismissing them."
As with the first time he said it, that gets an odd look from Anakin, but he nods and closes his eyes, exhales, long and slow, and his expression settles, eases. Mace watches him, and he can see a shadow in him, something very much like Qui-Gon, rebellious, reckless, but good at the heart of him, willing to take risks to save people and let himself be harmed so others won't. Different from the majority of Jedi, but valuable, necessary even. Someone to be cultivated, guided, helped. Anakin is still young, still learning himself. But once he finds his place, the Jedi Order will be all the better for his presence. He could be dangerous if he gives in to the dark side. But Qui-Gon believed so ardently that he was the chosen one that Mace can't help but believe as well, at times. Doesn't know what to think, usually, or whether or not to fear the shift that will bring a rebalancing of the Force, but prophecies aside, Anakin has the makings of a great Jedi, once he learns to face himself. "It's not the Vornskers," Anakin says after a moment, then pauses. "Not just the Vornskers," he corrects, and Kix mutters a curse that Mace agrees with wholeheartedly. Opening his eyes, Anakin looks at Mace and says, "It's bigger. It feels like..." He breaks off, grimacing, and says, "Bigger. Meaner."
"Yes," Mace agrees grimly. "I thought so, too."
The Vornskers are animalistic in their hunger, even with the influence of Sith alchemy on them. This hunger is far closer to a sentient power hunger, traced through with a malice that animals don't feel. "Wonderful," Cody says, resigned, and casts a look up at the building above them. "Up there?" "I'll scout," Anakin says, before Mace can even open his mouth. He draws his lightsaber, then takes three long steps, jumps to the top of a broken obelisk, and flips upwards, vanishing through the ruined walls. Mace frowns, casting his senses out, but he can't feel anything dangerous waiting, so he doesn't protest. "At least being up there will give us the high ground," Kix says, casting a wary look at the shadows around them. "It's weird that we haven't seen any animal life down here, especially if this place has been abandoned for centuries. They shouldn't know to be scared of us, right?"
"Unless there is no animal life because those Vornskers ate it all," Fives mutters.
"Likely not just the Vornskers," Mace says, and when Cody turns his head towards him, flat stare clear even through his helmet, he meets it with a raised brow. "The Sith would not have stopped with just one predator species."
"Great," Cody says, and glances upwards. Anything, sir? Leaning out beside a tree that cascades down over the side of the building, Anakin shakes his head, then leaps down, landing lightly. Just lots of mushrooms and plants, he says. Kix, want a ride? Somehow I doubt the lift works. I don't think I'd be willing to trust it even if it did, sir, Kix says dryly. But he grips Anakin's shoulder as Anakin gets an arm around him, then leaps for the building again. In the quiet, Mace raises a brow at Cody. Your bunker, he offers courteously. Cody's definitely rolling his eyes at him. Take fives first, he says. I don't want another Vornsker deciding he looks tasty. Maybe they just see me as a snack, Five says. Commander. Remind me never to let you spend time with Boyle, Cody mutters. Well? Don't get eaten, Mace tells him mildly, and grabs Fives, leaps hard, straight up from the ground. Then, just because he can, adds a flip at the top of his arc to make Fives whoop. They drop into the ruined building with a light thump, and Mace straightens and steps back, letting Fives find his feet. That's awesome, Fives says, grinning. It's like you're in zero gravity. Very similar, Mace allows, then turns and leaps back to the ground, landing beside Cody. You're going to tip everyone off if you keep playing favorites, Cody accuses, though he mostly sounds amused as he slings his blaster over his back. Mace raises a brow, unwavering. It's natural that Jedi form connections to those with a talent for the Force, he says. However latent, we are drawn to them instinctively. Is that how you find your Padawans? Cody asks, thoughtful. Some of them, Mace allows. I discovered Depa on a pirate ship as an infant. Shaak-Ti found one of her Padawans as a child in the aftermath of a flood. Quinlan found Ayla living as a slave while on a mission with his own master. Later, we all took them as our students. Sometimes the Force brings us together for reasons we cannot see at the time. For a moment, Cody is silent. Then, softly, he lets out an amused breath. Think finding a clone soldier with a Force connection in the middle of a war will count? Mace can hear the edge in his voice, the threat of something close to bitterness. Deliberately, he reaches out, catching Cody's hand, and curls his fingers around his armored forearm, grips just for a moment, and meets his eyes through the visor of his helmet. Yes, he says quiet, but with all the truth in his chest. The Jedi are responsible for the clones, given Sifo Dyas's actions. Whatever of your number have the ability to touch the Force, they will be offered training, just as any sentient would be. Cody doesn't respond for a long moment. Even though you weren't going to train Anakin? He asks. We refused Anakin at first, Mace admits, unflinching. And now Anakin is one of the most promising Jedi, for all of his hot-headedness. Perhaps it is time the Jedi Order considers who we accept, with less of an eye for tradition and more consideration placed on need. Well, Cody says after a moment, seeing as it looks like you're volunteering to take on Fives, you're giving yourself the biggest headache of all. So you'd know best. Mace can't help a faint smile. Tell me, Cody, he says, and lets go of Cody's arm. Have you ever met Depa Bilaba? Cody blinks. No, he admits. I don't think I've ever spoken to her commander, either. The 212th is usually stationed at the opposite end of the galaxy. Mace glances up to where voices are rising, Fives clear and unmistakable. I believe Fives and Depa will get along quite well, he says. Really? Cody says, disbelieving. Your Padawan was like Fives? Similar,
Mace allows. Very energetic and far too clever for my own good. There's a pause as Cody picks through the implications. Well, he says finally, at least you know what you're in for then. Mace doesn't confirm or deny. All Padawans are different, and training Depa, temple raised, will be an entirely different matter than training a soldier with no experience beyond the Gar, like Fives. He's sure. Are you ready? He asks instead, offering a hand, and Cody sighs and takes it, stepping close to hook an arm over Mace's shoulders. No flips if I can make a request, he says. Of course, Mace says, mildly amused that Cody would think he'd do the same to him as to Fives. I assumed you'd be less enthusiastic about acrobatics. Much less, Cody agrees, and braces himself as Mace leaps. It's straight to the second story, where the building is more hole than wall, spilling plants. Mace cushions their landing, and there are enough straggling, twisted trees to make it seem like the jungle they left that afternoon. Over here, sir, Kix offers, ducking out from between a tangle of branches. There are enough trees to keep the rain off, even if it comes in through the sides of the building. Enough fungus to keep it lit as well, Mace thinks, eyeing the pale blue-white growth that curl up within what walls remain. With some luck, they won't be poisonous. The last thing they all need is some sort of fungal infection from sleeping near them. Normally I'd say we should start a fire, Anakin says, sinking down against the wide trunk of a tree near the center of the room. But in a place this dark, it would probably be visible for miles. It's warm enough that we can survive without, Mace agrees, tugging his outer tunic off and laying it over a branch to dry. Anakin's is already hanging up as well, and he eyes it, then tells Fives, if you're not cold, hang that robe so it can dry. Oh, right, Fives says, a little sheepish, and strips it off. If you need it back, sir. I don't, Mace says simply. He takes the blanket Kix hands him, then passes it to Cody and says, I'll take first watch. I'll take second, Anakin says. And when Kix makes a sound like he's going to protest, he shakes his head. A Jedi should be the one keeping an eye on things, just in case. Cody pulls his helmet off, and he doesn't look all that much happier. You need sleep, sir, he says. More than you got the other night, at least. We can survive on less sleep for now, Mace says quietly. There are too many things in this city that could be a threat. Cody frowns but nods. We might not be Jedi, but we can watch a skyline, he says firmly. Mace snorts quietly. Only an idiot would doubt that, he says. However, this is largely a problem we can't identify on a planet that's strong in the Force. It should not be something you have to deal with alone. We're not alone. That's what you're here for. Cody meets his eyes, and it's easy to see he means it. Easy to see the determination in his face, the edge of something that's been honed down to sharpness by the war. Something that's good, steady and brave and unfaltering. I suppose it is, Mace allows, quiet. And Cody's smile comes quick and crooked. It doesn't light up his face, but it eases some of the lines there, settles some of the worry that hides in his eyes. Just logic, right? He asks, and then takes the blanket to a patch of ground that's between the gaping northern wall and the others, between the citadel and the others, Mace notes, and feels a flicker of fondness. He doesn't linger, but retreats to the crumbled wall and settles himself beneath a tangle of vines, crossing his legs beneath himself. The tower looms, large on the horizon, perfectly black and gleaming in the flashes of lightning that radiate down.
unease curls along Mace's spine, a weight, a warning. But he fixes his eyes on the city beneath it and refuses to be cowed. Regardless of what they find within it tomorrow, they'll endure. Out in the darkness, down among the trees and shattered stones, something moves, coming closer to their camp. Mace looks, but it's gone in a moment, vanished back into the darkness so thoroughly that he can't tell if he saw it at all. If it comes again, he can't find it. But that doesn't ease the disquiet that rises with the sound of the thunder and the hiss of the rain that starts to pour.
At least wait until nightfall, Aegon, Shaxx says, frowning at him. The Kaminoans frequent most of the rooms where you would need to go.
Aegon frowns deeply, displeased, but he folds his arms over his chest rather than making for the door. So that's at least something of a win.
There will be more guards at night, he counters,
but fewer eyes in general.
Shaxx points out, and offers him a smile.
Please, Aegon, I don't want you putting yourself in danger.
Aegon looks away pointedly and doesn't answer. Crushing a thread of impatience, Shaxx inclines her head to him.
Thank you,
she says with dignity, and feels the presence of a body approaching her quarters. Relieved to leave the polite discussion over Aegon's mission and the speed required of it, she lets out a breath and turns to get the door, opening it just as Colt reaches for the chime.
Commander, Shaxx says warmly. Good morning.
Colt eyes her, then the chime, and pauses.
Good morning, General,
he finally says, and inclines his head to Aegon.
General Kolar?
Your Commander Colt?
Aegon asks.
The one staying with Master T?
Yes, sir.
Colt looks from Aegon to Shaxx, clearly feeling the tension between them. Shaxx smiles ruefully and beckons him inside. When the door is safely closed, she folds her hands in front of her and asks,
Colt, do you know if there are guards kept on the records room and Nala Se's office at night?
Carefully, Colt pulls his helmet off, and he's frowning.
Not Nala Se's office,
he says after a moment.
But Shinies get guard duty outside the cloning rooms, and the records are there, I'm pretty sure. Lots of Kaminoans there during the day, though. And bots, too.
I can get past clone troopers,
Aegon says dismissively, and when Shaxx gives him a reproving look, he just frowns at her.
If I can get past huts, I can get past clones, Shaxx.
I'm not doubting your abilities, Aegon,
Shaxx says soothingly.
But please, be gentle when you do.
Colt makes a sound of quiet amusement.
No offense, sir, but Shinies on guard duty can stand to be knocked around a little. It'll teach them to keep their eyes open better.
He studies Aegon for a moment, then asks,
Sorry, sir, but you're not going to hide the break-in?
The curl of Aegon's smile is sharp.
I'll make it look like Ventress, he says. I felt something, went looking and caught her, then chased her off.
Raising a brow, Colt looks from Aegon to Shaxx.
You're just going to lie to the Kaminoans? He asks, though he sounds more bemused than judgmental.
I didn't think Jedi did that kind of thing.
Shaxx hides her smile, exchanging looks with Aegon.
It is not the way of the Jedi to undercut an ally, she allows. However, Jedi also have long experience with tense negotiations, and the maneuvering required to come to a satisfactory agreement.
Maneuvering, Colt repeats skeptically.
Aegon snorts.
I maneuver my way behind locked doors,
he says in explanation,
with a lightsaber.
Shaxx closes her eyes rather than roll them.
It's not because Aegon is a Zabrak that he's like this. Eth Koth is perfectly reserved and diplomatic, after all. This is just how Aegon is.
It will be fine, she says firmly. Aegon, would you like to rest or accompany me to see the tests that are scheduled?
With a frown, Aegon considers for a moment, then says, tests. Shock was afraid of that. Strangling a sigh, she tells herself that it's better than Aegon deciding to break into the cloning chambers in broad daylight, and inclines her head.
Very well, Commander.
Colt looks amused, but he opens the door for them. Ready when you are, generals. He waits for them to pass, then falls in beside Shock, and says,
if you wanted General Kolar, you could always look in on the training. LS has the newest batch of Shinies doing hand-to-hand this morning.
Aegon looks much more enthused about that idea.
LS? He asks.
An Akrona bounty hunter and mercenary, Shock says. Jango Fett hand-picked him. He usually oversees the final stages of training, but one of the other instructors was injured during a drill.
She smiles, perfectly innocent.
I'm sure he wouldn't refuse the help, if he were to offer.
Aegon eyes the corridor ahead of them, then looks at Colt. You're staying?
I won't leave General T's side, Colt confirms. Rank or battalions stationed here, now that Grievous is on the move, and Blitz and Havoc have command of the troops. They know I'm guarding the general.
There were assassination attempts, I'm afraid,
Shock says, which is another lie that Aegon will read. He inclines his head, clearly accepting their planned excuse, and then turns off without another word, taking a path towards the center of the training areas. Shock watches him go, fondly amused, and shakes her head.
The troopers seem all right,
she asks Colt instead of commenting, however.
Yes, sir.
Colt pauses, waiting for a scientist to pass them, and then says more quietly.
Droids were discussing something when I looked in. Didn't tell me, though. I figured I'd wait until you were with me to press.
Shock inclines her head, spares one more glance after Aegon, then turns in the opposite direction. The lift is empty, and she leads the way inside, watching as it starts to sink without a sound.
I do wonder, she says quietly, why I had such a strong reaction to Tup of all the clones I've touched.
Colt casts her a sideways look, frowning faintly.
You saw something? He asks. Not just a feeling?
He's going to kill a Jedi, Shock says sadly. I felt her die, betrayed and bewildered. And Tup?
She pauses, and then repeats softly.
He kept saying, good soldiers always follow orders.
Colt is stiff, frozen beside her.
General, he says, a warning in his voice. I know you don't want the Kaminoans decommissioning clones, but if he's a Jedi killer...
Shock shakes her head.
He's done nothing yet. I can still save him, Commander.
What if the Jedi he kills is you? Colt asks harshly. Sir, I know you want to help us.
Shock reaches out, folding her hand over his.
Commander, she says gently, I would not be a Jedi if I gave up so soon, before I had tried. Even if I am the one he kills, I would try to save him first.
For a long moment, Colt stares at her, mouth twisted, something between anger and frustration bubbling under his skin.
Yes, sir, he finally allows, but don't ask me to leave you alone with him.
Shock can accept that compromise.
Of course, Colt, she says gently. I have been a Jedi for many years. He could not kill me easily, even if he tried.
I don't want him to try, Colt says darkly, but he presses his free hand over the back of hers and then pulls away as the lift comes to a stop.
You're impressive, General, but that's why traitors are so dangerous. No one expects them even when they know they're around.
Shock doesn't tell him that she meant, he could not kill me, far more practically. Her spatial awareness is good, even for a Togruta of her age. For 20 meters in every direction, she knows precisely how people are moving, where they are. Even if Tup were to lose himself, she would feel it before he could harm her.
It will be fine, Colt, she says gently, and heads for the medical bay without waiting for his next protest. The privacy light is on, glowing red, but the doors open when she inputs her code, and she steps into a swift flow of activity, droids passing quickly. They're beeping at each other with a tone like surprise or concern, and Shuck frowns. She can't sense anything from them, and the clones are all sedated, sleeping quietly, but something's happened, and unease sits like a weight against her spine.
General T, a voice says, and Shuck turns to greet the droid she spoke to the other day as it buzzes closer. Thank you for coming.
Of course. Shock returns, bowing to it. Thank you for accommodating my request. You found something?
The droid cocks its head at her. Yes, General, it confirms, and doesn't ask how she knows. During deep brain scans, we encountered an anomaly. Each member of the squad has an organic chip implanted in their brains. However, this chip is not featured on any current schematics of clone biology, and its presence is a mystery.
Colt's indrawn breath is harsh, and Shock feels the words ripple through her, a burning, glass-edged cut that sings through the force with intense and importance.
This, she thinks, and folds her hands into her sleeves to keep the tremble in them from being obvious. This is vital.
Can they be removed safely? She asks, carefully picking her words. Or are they tied to the body's function?
The droid buzzes, quietly in frustration.
We cannot tell, General. As of now, we do not even know how they were implanted or when.
Shock closes her eyes for a moment, breathing through the worry that curls around her lungs. She thinks of Agen, planning his break-in, and records and clones in development.
The whole squad has them? She asks.
If she sends this droid with him, maybe...
Yes, General. The droid cocks its head.
I calculate there is a high probability that all current clones have them.
Check me, Colt says, and Shock opens her eyes, giving him a startled look. Grimly, he nods to her and says to the droid, I'm from one of the first batches. If you don't find it in me, you'll know it's not related to keeping us clones alive, right?
It would be valuable data, yes, the droid agrees. This way, Commander.
Colt, Shock says softly.
Colt just tips his chin up.
It's the best way, sir. It won't take long, right?
Correct, the droid confirms. It is a level 5 brain scan, but non-invasive. You will have to be sedated during the process, however.
That's fine. Colt hesitates, then offers his helmet to Shock. If you don't mind, sir.
Shock knows precisely what such a gesture means. Carefully, deftly, she takes the helmet from him, fitting her fingers over the streaks of gray on the cheeks. She cradles it for a moment, and even though she isn't Quinlan, even though psychometry isn't one of her gifts, she's almost certain she can feel the imprint of his thoughts on the plastoid, the edge of fear and the sheer, stubborn determination that overwhelms it.
I will guard it with my life, she says, gentle.
Colt's expression twists. Please don't, sir, he says, aggrieved. And Shock laughs softly. Shifting the helmet to the curve of her arm, she leans up, cupping his cheek with one hand, and touches their foreheads together for just a moment.
I will guard it, she says,
and means, I will guard you. Colt's breath is low, rough,
grateful.
I know, sir, he returns, and pulls back, following the droid into another room. Left alone among sleeping clones, Shock breathes in, breathes out, grips Colt's helmet, and can't shake the memory of Mace's absolute certainty that she should keep only Colt or one of his batchmates around her. Colt won't have a chip. She already knows it. But that leaves the question of what the chips are for, and why the younger clones have them. No one but the Kaminoans could have implanted them, but for what reason? Tup is going to kill a Jedi, she thinks. There's something wrong with Tup, and he has a chip in his head, and he's going to lose himself. There's something wrong. They need to get Tup's chip out. Before anything else, they need to have it removed, because otherwise she doesn't know what will happen to him, but there won't be any returning from it.